Vaping is front and center nowadays when it comes to health warnings. The question is, how far do you want the government to go in terms of regulating vaping products or other products? Welcome. Thanks for being a part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. If you had a three-day weekend and you're getting back in the swing of things, then I hope your Tuesday is going well so far. And I just want to take 30 seconds or so to explain the genesis of today's program. We had a show the other week where we talked about the vaping controversy and what health officials are saying and all the warnings associated with that. One of our listeners wrote some comments on our Facebook page. He was pretty angry. He objected to our discussion and he said, look, regulators and the governors don't care about health. These are his words. He said, if they did, they would have banned tobacco by now and not vapor. So look, does he have a point? Where's the line? Why vaping? Why not cigarettes and tobacco? And why not other products? For example, just this past weekend, I witnessed other drivers holding phones in front of them while zipping past me at 80 miles per hour. 80 miles per hour, and they were texting. So why not ban texting while driving? Oh, that's right. Wait a second. How far do you think we should go? Email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org. We're on Facebook, Full Story WSHU. And look, we just want to know what you think and why. Lane Filler is with us. He's a member of Newsday's editorial board. He's been with us before, and it's great to have him back. How are you, Lane?
I'm doing great. That was a broad and varied introduction to this subject. I feel like I'm going to need to do a couple of hours today.
We'll get you back for a long one. Thanks for coming on.
Right.
We always appreciate your time. Hey, look, before we get going, how about some background? What are your readers telling you about vaping?
All right. So there's a lot of different things we hear. And I talk to readers, and I've also written columns where I talk to vape users and vape store owners. On the one hand, you have a group of people saying kids are picking this up who are not currently addicted to tobacco, and that's really problematic. Why get them addicted to new things? And plus, they're being induced by flavors like Scooby-Doo, cotton candy, gummy bear, blah, blah, blah. And then you have a lot of people who have quit smoking by using vape. You have a lot of adults who have quit smoking by using vape and say they use those super sweet, supposedly child attractant flavors because the tobacco flavored stuff just reminds them of cigarettes and makes them want to have a cigarette. And then I think you have vape store owners who, the ones I've talked to, and these are not the 7-Eleven selling Juul. These are, you know, real vape shops with 1,000 different brands and flavors and machines and stuff. And they're saying, look, I don't sell to minors. I have a lot of people who used to spend $140 a week on Newports who now spend $30 a week on Mint Vape. We really feel we make a difference here. And then beyond that, you have this overarching issue that, you know, we're not even going to know how bad this is for you for 50 years or whether it's bad for you. I know we have some situations now where people seem to have died or gotten hurt by almost exclusively by black market vaping products and almost exclusively THC, not nicotine. So I think there's a lot of mystery here and a lot of room for interpretation.
So when you talk to the vape shop owners, are they basically saying that in a sense that they're providing a service, if you will?
Well, I think it depends how savvy they are, and some of them are very savvy. So that they would say, A, we're providing a service. They would say, B, most of the anti-vape movement seems to be based on the idea that we don't want kids picking this up. And it's already illegal for kids in most places to buy and use this stuff. So we've never banned beer because we don't want kids to have beer. And we've never banned liquor because we don't want kids to have liquor. We haven't actually, you know, most places are legalizing weed, even though we don't want kids to have marijuana. We've never criminalized guns, even though we don't want kids to have guns. So why is this the only product in the history of the world that we're talking about banning for all people so kids can't use it?
Okay, so that's the question. So what do you think? Why is vaping being targeted now?
Well, I think for one thing that gets things targeted or legalized is when the people in power don't use them. And the people in power in the world are 50 and 60 and 70-year-olds who run county legislatures and state legislatures. Most of them quit smoking cigarettes years ago. Most of them don't vape. And there's nothing easier to ban than something you don't personally enjoy or use. That's what you see with marijuana legalization, that we aged into generations running this country that use or used to use marijuana.
Interesting, because, you know, I'm thinking of Governor Cuomo and Governor Lamont, and Governor Cuomo was against the legalization of pot for a while. He came around during the primaries, and Governor Lamont has been for it ever since the nomination. And once he got elected, he's always been for it. That's interesting. And you know, later on, we're going to have, just so you know, Josh Elliott is going to come on. He's a state rep from Connecticut, and he's been one of the major proponents to legalize marijuana, recreational marijuana in Connecticut. And I'm going to be curious to get his point of view as to why it is that the state should regulate vaping, but at the same time, they're saying, you know what, go ahead and smoke pot.
Well, and not only that, but they're saying we should be regulating the kind of candy-like or fruit-like versions of vape the most because they're attracted to children, while we're legalizing marijuana chocolate bars, marijuana gummy bears, and marijuana lollipops.
So are the kids, but here's something that confuses me, Lane. If the vape shops aren't selling these gummy bears and Captain Crunch and everything to the kids, are the adults buying them and then giving them to the kids, or are the adults actually enjoying these flavors?
I've heard two answers on this. So first of all, yes, I hear that the adults do enjoy the flavors that are trying to quit smoking. But in terms of when I go into, you know, Frank's House of Vape, and they say they don't sell to minors, I've heard two things. I've heard that parents come back with the kids and buy it, and I've also heard that the majority of kids buy their stuff at convenience stores where vaping is not the main business. Maybe tobacco is not the main business. And for instance, a 7-Eleven or a Cumberland Farms, if they lost their tobacco license, wouldn't be out of business. Whereas a vape store, if it lost its license to sell this stuff, would be out of business, and they're more careful. That's not unlike what I found as an underage person, buying beer and liquor.
Right.
That the convenience stores were where you could do that, or buying cigarettes when I was under 18.
So
it sounds reasonable.
What's your read on all of this? Where is this going to go in terms of regulations, and what's going to be banned and what's not going to be banned?
So I think you will definitely see them try to crack down much more severely on people selling to minors. I think you may see locales and even states that ban the fruitier versions of this and then the candy versions. And there was also, this is being discussed less because it kind of came up and went away, but President Donald Trump promised that the FDA was going to ban all flavors of this other than tobacco and menthol / mint. And that was, I believe the FDA actually put out a policy statement on this, that it was going to happen after a period of time, and then it sort of disappeared. So I think we're going to be discussing this and arguing about it and seeing the wave go back and forth for quite a while. And again, it's so new. We literally don't have any idea if it causes head cancer or has almost no effect at all for most users long term.
And at the same time, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, why years ago didn't the federal government step in and say, you can't sell menthol cigarettes, you can't sell Salems, you can't sell Newports and whatever else? Is it basically the same thing?
There are behaviors in this country, even hobbies, that are practically 100% fatal. Mountain climbing on significant, rock climbing without ropes, for people who are serious about it, has a fatality rate, a lifetime of nearly 100%. And it's not against the law. And neither is eating oysters. And, you know, some percentage of them are going to have raw oysters, you know, a disease bacterium, and it's going to kill you. I don't know how it is we decide what behaviors we do and don't want to ban, except that they catch our eye, they catch our fancy, they are behaviors that aren't normally enjoyed by legislators. But I mean, the reason we never banned cigarettes, because lots and lots of people like to smoke, and lots of them were powerful. And there was a lot of money in it. But there's certainly how we decide what to ban and not to ban. The only thing I know about it for sure is it has nothing to do with how dangerous it is.
You know, and I use the example of texting while driving. And I mean, you mean to tell me that someone out in Silicon Valley can't create an app that says, okay, if the car is going over 65 miles per hour, it automatically cuts off your texting app and messages in Verizon and all that, and you simply can't use it?
But what about the passenger?
Right.
My phone asks me if I'm driving all the time. It says, hey, are you driving? I'm like, oh, no, I swear I'm not.
Lane.
You know, I think the amazing thing about texting while driving is it's a behavior that everybody agrees is absolutely abominable, including all of the people that do it. Like, no one's in favor of texting while driving. It's just people can't stop.
Absolutely. Lane, coming up, we have a whole bunch of guests. We have professors coming up. Like I said, we have the state rep, and Lauren Curran is going to be joining us a little bit later on. I hope you listen in, because I'd love to get your thoughts about this at some point in the near future.
I'll do that and tell Laura I said hi.
Thanks, Lane. I appreciate your time. We're going to continue the discussion now about vaping, government regulations. Who gets to decide? Why do they get to do this? And why vaping and not other products? John Thomas is in the studio with me. He's a health law professor at Quinnipiac University. Hey, Professor, how are you?
Doing well. Glad to be here.
Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. Coming up in a few minutes, Josh Elliott's going to be joining us. Josh is a Democratic state rep from Connecticut. He represents the 88th district, which is Hamden. And Josh, as I said before, is one of the main proponents for the legalization of recreational marijuana in Connecticut. He's been pushing it for a while. It did not work in the last legislative session, and I know he's going to be trying again in the future. So I'd love to get his thoughts on vaping and smoking, and then maybe even vaping marijuana. What's with THC? Let's see what he said. You heard the discussion with Lane. What do you think?
Well, I think he raised a really good point about the unpredictability about when government becomes involved, acts paternalistically to protect us from our own worst instincts, and when it allows us to make our own choices. And it's hard to find a rationale that leans a thread through all these decisions. No requirement of motorcyclists to wear helmets.
Hmm.
Car passengers and drivers have to wear safety belts. You could buy any kind of gun you want. Some places you can't buy products with raw eggs. It doesn't seem like the governmental decisions are related to the probability of harm and the degree of harm.
Mm-hmm. And for those who like cheeseburgers, you can't get that cheeseburger medium rare. I mean, it's going to be well done in a lot of places. They're not going to take a risk.
That's right.
So why is it that vaping is being singled out nowadays? And do you think the government needs to step in and somehow regulate vaping, especially to protect those who are young?
So I think Lane made a really good point about this. It's something new. It's something that mainly younger people are doing. And the regulators, the people in government, as he pointed out, 50s, 60s, 70s, and depending on what happens in our next year's presidential election, maybe 80s, are making decisions. And this is just not a product they were familiar with, even though it's been around for a decade. It's not a product they use. And there are reasons to be afraid. It's a new threat. We tend to, I think, as a society, accept threats over time. You try to regulate your diet depending on the medical advice at the moment, and eventually you'll figure out what's bad today might be okay tomorrow, and we stop worrying about these sorts of things. We stopped worrying about cigarettes a while back, even though it causes many more deaths than vaping. This is a brand new scary thing. 26 deaths recently recorded, over about 1,300 illnesses, and it's mainly children. I think the interest of government and regulators to protect children is a good thing. So I think it's the novelty and it's the demographics. It's children. I think that's what's going on.
The gentleman who wrote into our Facebook page the other week, I thought, made some very valid points. And he said, look, according to the studies, vaping helps people who smoke so-called traditional cigarettes stop. Maybe not all of them, but it helps some of them. So this is actually a good thing. And I'm not saying that, yeah, I'm backing vaping in any way, but his point was, how can you say that you should be banning us now because what we're doing may actually help others?
I mean, he makes a really great point. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control, the federal agency, reports that in the United States, 480,000 people annually die from cigarette smoking. Nearly 10% of those are from passive smoking. This is about 1,300 people dying a day from the consequences of smoking cigarettes, over 100 of them just because people in their social sphere or family were smoking cigarettes. This versus 26 deaths, maybe, from vaping, 1,300 illnesses, maybe, from vaping total. More people die a day from smoking than might ever have gotten sick vaping. So I think he makes a really good point. Why have governmental intervention here when you don't, in a context where everybody knows it causes cancer?
I have to admit, after watching the news for a number of years, I was somewhat taken aback by what has occurred over the last few weeks, because all of a sudden I'm hearing Governor Cuomo, Governor Lamont, the health commissioners, executives from across the island, so many people coming out with these warnings, and I'm reading it going, wow.
It's interesting because they aren't talking about other ailments, environmental problems that can cause more illness, greater numbers of death. I think it's a very fascinating time. We have a really interesting governmental form in this country. It's a government with limitations specified in both state and federal constitutions. And if the power is not given to the federal government, the power is reserved to the states. States have this broad-based possibility they can regulate for our health with no command to do it. There's nothing in the federal constitution that says the feds have to save you, protect your health, protect your welfare. They can, they don't have to. There's nothing in the state constitution that says that. So we have this sort of amorphous notion that our governments are there to do good, but no mandate that they actually do good. And that makes them flexible, but also I think makes them unpredictable and sometimes not very rational.
And I was telling you during the break, just before I came in today, I looked at the headlines from the New York Times, and there was an article in the Times, I forget who wrote it, but it was basically, why is asbestos still being used in this country? Why is it being imported? Why is it being manufactured? We all know that asbestos is bad for you. Why is it the government stepping in to prevent all these illnesses and deaths? And it occurred to me, if the government, and if we've been talking about this for decades now, if the government isn't doing it for asbestos, again, why with vaping?
Yeah, it's another interesting case scenario. We know that asbestos is a carcinogen. It causes cancer. We know that smoking tobacco causes cancer, and the government doesn't step in those cases and wants to step in here. I mean, my sense is it probably comes from a misguided but good place. We want to protect people as governments when we can. We don't really want to come up against significant economic and political power on the other side. So we pick our cases where we might be able to make a difference. The vaping industry is not huge. It seems like it's mainly young people. They don't vote too much. Some of them may not be old enough to vote, so we're not too worried about them. This is a case where we can step in as governmental regulators, claim to be doing some good, protecting people from their own worst instincts, feel better about ourselves as regulators, hope that our constituents think, oh, yeah, they're actually doing something good, whereas ordinarily you hear the narrative, government's not doing anything for anybody. Maybe this is a case of let's find a symbolic act, let's act, and then maybe people will think as government officials we're actually worth our paychecks.
I have to ask you before I bring in Josh Elliott, should there be more regulations? Should there be any bans in place? I mean, what are your feelings?
So I don't know. I mean, every time we come up with something like this, I think back to the war on drugs started in 1970 with Richard Nixon. And there's no evidence that it did any good, and there's a lot of evidence that it's done harm. It's related to many maladies in the world today. So for instance, think about our trouble on our southern border with Mexico. One of the huge drivers down there is the drug trade. Now, if you look at the data about who's using drugs, there is not a drug usage problem south of our border. There's not a drug usage problem north of our border, north of in Canada. It's in the United States. So this is a huge demand industry. Because the stuff's illegal, it brings a premium because people have to risk their lives to bring it to you. So it brings a lot of money. So what it's really done is we've exported the production. We import the product. It has destroyed many lives. It has destroyed all those communities in that northern triangle of Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, because the way you get the drugs to the U.S. is you fly it from Colombia into the northern triangle because the U.S. Navy has shut down shipping lanes, and then you truck it, walk it, hitchhike it up to the U.S., and it's destroyed Central American communities. They're running from the drug trade and drug cartels to our southern border. That's causing problems here. So I think before we step in to protect ourselves, we need to ask ourselves, what is the consequence of the protection? Sometimes the treatment is worse than the disease.
Josh Elliott is coming in now. Democratic State Representative from Connecticut. He represents the 88th District, which is Hamden. It's always good to welcome him back. Representative Ron. Elliott, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. And John, good to hear from you as well.
Hey, Josh, I'm one of his constituents, and he's a former student. So we've got a serious set of ethical conflicts here, Josh.
I actually did not know this. It is all symbiotic today. John Thomas is also with us, health law professor at Quinnipiac University. So, Representative, what do you think? Should there be some bans? Should there be some regulations on vaping products?
So I'm still very much on the fence about this. I don't have any strong convictions either way. I do have the inclination to say that I don't want to just be making a ban before we have a full slate of information. I know there's the deaths that we've seen have not come from cartridges from places that we know are already well regulated. They're usually coming from the black market. And the question that I've been posing to people is this, is if vaping is just addictive, and we don't know if it's bad for you necessarily, and maybe it's not bad, it's just addictive. Do we want to ban it just due to the fact that it's addictive? And I think that there are people that would say, well, if kids get their hands on it, then it begins that slow descent into cigarettes or something that will be more toxic. And then there are those people who say, well, for those who are already addicted to something like cigarettes, this allows them essentially an escape hatch where it's far less damaging. And so for me, I'm going to keep on listening. I've talked to some business owners who have concerns with overregulating, but then I've talked to parents who are concerned about the fact that, you know, kids are going into the bathrooms and they're getting loaded up with plumes of smoke from these small devices that have historically been aimed towards children. So my priority right now is to ensure that these aren't being marketed towards children. I think that's the biggest fear and the biggest concern. And then the next concern will be ultimately what are the long-term health effects of these vaping products.
So that brings me to my question, which some have proposed, and they've said, why not ban those flavored e-cigarettes, the ones that appear to be aimed at the kids, the ones with all the goofy names attached to them? Why just get rid of those?
I mean, to me, that seems totally reasonable. I haven't heard a lot of strong information about why we wouldn't need to do that. I think as an adult user, you can certainly be okay with something that is not flavored or something that just at the very least is not marketed as though it's geared towards kids. So that to me is something that I would be comfortable with. I'm still open to hearing arguments on both sides. Fortunately, because session won't be in until February next year, I don't have to make a decision yet. And I know our chairs with Mary Abrams, Senator Mary Abrams, and Representative John Steinberg out of Meriden and Westport, respectively, are doing a lot in terms of reaching out to communities across the state to get feedback from people, both from the business community and from, you know, the concerned parents. And it would surprise me if we were not to do something in terms of the vaping products. What that actually looks like yet, I do not know.
You've been a strong proponent for legalizing recreational marijuana in Connecticut.
Still am.
And for the sale of it. And I think you're going to bring it up in the next session. Is that correct?
So that's the hope. I can tell you that the nice thing is that the governor and his office is firmly on board with legalization. They ran on this issue, and they are committed to it. I think the question this year was, how active were they in the political process? And I think by all accounts, they were not that active on this topic specifically. I will tell you that on Thursday this week, we are going to be going to New York City, meeting with the governor of New York, the governor of New Jersey, and various representatives around some of the contiguous states, and trying to see if there's something that we can adopt that we will all jump on board with, to have as much similarity between these states as possible, since this is not going to be something that the federal government really will be working on. This is really going to come down to the states.
So a regional effort to legalize.
That's correct. And I think it's a great idea. You know, it's the governor's office actually that reached out to me and asked if I would come, and I happily accepted. Now, in terms of what the legislature is thinking, you know, we can't really paint the whole legislature with broad strokes, but there are a few individual people that are particularly important within this fight. And those three people specifically is Steve Sastrom, who is the chair of judiciary in San Bridgeport, who's done phenomenal work ensuring that there will be expungement of records baked into this bill, has done a ton to ensure that, you know, we have a process going forward so that we can look at this and make sure that people don't carry the scarlet letter indefinitely. I am pushing for an automatic expungement, and that's going to be more of a fight. I know California has done something very similar to this, but the technology is difficult, and only because when you are sent to prison, you are not encoded with a specific marijuana conviction. It is a drug conviction, and parsing that out with all the different types of drug convictions is going to be the difficult aspect, but he's done very good work. There's Mike D'Agostino, who is the chair of general law. He's actually a colleague of mine in Hamden, and he's been really important because what he's done is he's written the structure of the bill and what it would look like to regulate this across the state. And lastly, there is Jason Rojas, who is a representative out of East Hartford, who is the chair of finance, and that's going to be to determine what are we doing in terms of taxing this on the back end, on the front end, to the consumer, to the business. So the question is, do we want to tie up the hands of these three chairs who have a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of other business to get done up at the Capitol? And if the votes aren't there, does it end up being a waste of time? Now, the majority leader, Matt Ritter, has publicly stated and said privately that he would like to pursue a constitutional amendment. The concern with a constitutional amendment is this. Do we want to be using that process for something like legalizing and regulating marijuana? Generally, it's for protecting rights. It's for ensuring we have civil liberties. Do we want to use a process for something as simple as legalization when really it should be a political process? That is a question for us to determine, because if we don't have the votes to just straight legalize and regulate, maybe we want to show the public that we are making some progress. And if we do go through the constitutional amendment process, we wouldn't actually see the end of that result for probably about 6 years. Mm. We would need super majorities, and then it's getting the ballot for next year. And if we don't, we get simple majorities, then it wouldn't be in the ballot till 2022, and then implementation probably wouldn't be till 2024 or later. So those are all the questions that we have yet to sort through. Again, since we're not in session, it's hard to know where we're at, but there is a movement from various areas to get this done. So to be seen.
All right. Thank you. That was a thorough explanation. I appreciate that. We have about a minute and a half before I have to take a break. So here's my question, and we could even pick it up on the other side of the break. Let's say you get this legalized. Somehow it just comes to fruition in the next year or two, theoretically.
Yes.
Would the marijuana products be available in vaping form?
I would imagine so, only having seen what they're like in Massachusetts, I can't imagine that they would not be available in vaping form. So my inclination would be to say yes, although I could not say with any level of certainty.
I'm just thinking about proposed bans, and if those proposed bans go through overall, would that mean also that it would conflict with what you would try to do in terms of legalizing marijuana? Would that then be excluded?
I think that would just be part of the conversation. I think really most of the concern is what has been going into these vaping products, because my understanding is, you know, what's dangerous about cigarettes is when something becomes fire, you know, there's that carbon release, and that is essentially what is going to cause cancer. With these vaping products, since that never happens, it's much less of an issue. My understanding is that what has been causing these deaths is whatever the filler is. And so as long as we regulate the market, there's much less of a concern there, but still to be seen, and I'm still open to hearing all perspectives.
John Thomas is health law professor at Quinnipiac University. Josh Elliott is one of the professor's former students, but now he is a Democratic state representative from Connecticut. He represents the 88th District, which is Hamden. And Laura Curran is joining us, the Nassau County Executive. Executive Curran, we always appreciate your time. Thank you. How are you?
Happy to be here. I'm great. Thank you.
The New York State Health Commissioner has labeled what's happening an emergency. Is it a health emergency in Nassau County?
It absolutely is. We are seeing so many of our young people getting hooked on nicotine through these drug delivery devices called e-cigarettes, pods, vaping, whatever you call them. You know, kids really weren't smoking that much anymore. Cigarettes went from cool to uncool in a few decades. Now we see, you know, 40% of our high school students are now vaping. It's a real problem.
Well, how bad of a problem is it? I mean, is it just a problem for certain ages, teens or young adults, or does it go to the older generation? And there's a part B to that, but if you could answer this part first, we'll get to part B in a moment.
I mean, it's really a crisis for all ages. My concern for young people is that the concentration of nicotine that they are taking into their bodies is so high, they become addicted very, very quickly. We had a pediatrician who told me that there was a kid who was 12 years old who was chewing Nicorette gum in school because his doctor told him that he had to do this. It was doctor recommended. He got in trouble for chewing gum, and he said, well, my doctor told me I have to do this.
The part B to the question is that Lane Filler was on with us. Lane Filler from Newsday, he was on with us
sure.
at the beginning of the program, and he said to say hi to you. And
hello, Lane.
And his point was, he goes, the reason that he thinks that one of the reasons that people are fixating on this, if I could use that word, is that because older people, the people who run governments, aren't vaping, and it's basically aimed at the younger people. And he said this is maybe one of the reasons why people are saying this is such a health emergency as compared to all the other bad things that are happening in society.
You know, that's a very interesting theory, and it kind of makes a lot of sense to me. And when you see that these products are very cynically and aggressively marketed to children with mango flavor and bubblegum flavor and all of these wonderful, you know, cartoon characters, It as a parent myself, I've got three daughters. It makes me very, very concerned. And you're right, you don't see a lot of older people doing it. It's really a teen culture phenomenon.
Professor Thomas, I have to ask you, you and I think are relatively in the same age group. Do you know any older people who maybe vape?
I don't know anybody who vapes tobacco products. That's my elliptical answer. I do know people in our age group who've returned to the stimulus or anti-stimulus of marijuana who mm-hmm. have taken it through vaping. But I do think it's mainly a young people issue. I'd like to ask our state regulator here a question. I mean, there are a lot of public health issues. Where would you rank vaping among the public health issues facing young people in your area?
Executive Curran, that one's for you.
I would say that it is quite high. I mean, we're also concerned about THC, and the very high levels of that in vaping products, which of course is you know not allowed to be sold. But I think it's a real problem. And we had a young kid in our county who was hospitalized with this is sort of one of these mysterious vaping illnesses. In fact, one is even suing Juul over this.
But how many kids are suffering opioid issues or other issues not having had vaccines or other public health issues, STDs, sexually transmitted diseases?
I would say that opioid is still our, you know, if you want to rank the dangers, is still number one danger. We've made some significant progress through enforcement, through prevention, and through education. But it's, you know, we're still seeing too many young people overdosing on opioids.
Well, sort of my question, if you have limited resources.
The thing that concerns me about the vaping is the very addictive nature of nicotine. And, you know, when you're smoking cigarettes, there are obvious barriers. It doesn't taste good. It makes you feel sick. Your parents can tell if you're doing it. With vaping, you can do it completely under the radar. Nobody knows that you're doing it, and you're getting yourself hooked on these chemicals.
It almost sounds as if you're saying this could possibly be a gateway.
I think, and I'm not a doctor, but I think this absolutely can be a gateway. You are inhaling into your body stuff that you don't really know what's in it. And then it's a drug delivery device, whether it's for nicotine, whether it's for THC, and it's very easy to do. There are not enough barriers to acquiring it and also to ingesting it. It's not unpleasant as cigarettes are. It's not detectable as cigarettes are or other kinds of drug uses.
If you don't mind, I'd like to bring in Representative Josh Elliott. Josh is a Democratic state rep from Connecticut, and he represents Hamden. And Representative Elliott, my question for you is about the black market products nowadays for vaping, which contain marijuana. How do you regulate that? And quite frankly, where do they even come from nowadays?
I think the answer is in the question that if it's on the black market and we're not regulating it, we can't regulate it. I mean, I don't think that simply by passing a law that would regulate eliminates the black market. I think we've seen that in enough states now. And to be fair, that was one of the arguments, or is one of the arguments, for implementing a system of legalization and regulation. I think that that argument is becoming sort of having less and less strength. At the same time, I don't think the black market is nearly as strong as it would be normally. And for people that do want to enter the market, they know where to go to, where they will have a much higher level of trust in the product and chance of getting something safely. In terms of, you know, what we can do to go after black market sellers, I mean, that's like the whole war on drugs, isn't it? I mean, it's we cannot be successful where there is a market. We simply must do the best within the confines of what is possible and make sure that if there is a market out there, people are protected and consumers are protected, even if it's something that inherently is bad for them. And that's one concern that I have is, generally speaking, if we have something that we want to stop in terms of people's behaviors, we almost immediately go towards a criminalization approach as opposed to a public health approach. And I would assume that John Thomas would agree with me that no matter what we do, we should be well more public health minded as opposed to criminalization minded, because all that ends up doing is putting people in prison for what is essentially an addiction and a sickness. And people also ought to be able to do with their bodies as they will, as long as it doesn't hurt other people. Those are some of my broader ideas in terms of what we should do with the black market, is that I would say that there really is inherently no way to stop the black market. Just pause its deleterious effects.
Well, I would agree with you, Josh. There's little evidence.
If I may jump in on that.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to give Professor Thomas 1 second, and then I'll come over
sure.
to you. So.
Yeah, I was just going to agree with Josh. There's little evidence that the war on drugs actually had any effect on the use of drugs. It's just increased the cost and increased the risk because people don't know their sources and there isn't any regulation of the providers. And I would hope that as a society we've figured out that banning substances doesn't lead to stop using substances, and criminalizing conduct is not necessarily the best way to foster a healthy society. Witness a generation of young African-American men put in prison using the same substance that once it became popular among the white culture simply becomes a regulated legal substance.
Executive Karen?
Yes. So when it comes to the illicit market, our police department in Nassau County did a crackdown of counterfeit tobacco, nicotine vaping products. These fake Logic, the brand Logic, was made in China, and it wasn't properly, you know, it's unclear what was actually in it. So there was a big takedown of several convenience stores of this counterfeit product. And our Office of Consumer Affairs has also investigating dozens of locations selling what we believe are products made in other countries that perhaps even were not properly regulated in their country of origin, that are not allowed to be sold in this country. So they're not cleared by the FDA, and yet they're being sold on our shelves, and we don't know what's in them. So we're actively doing that kind of enforcement. And this is on the nicotine. I'm not addressing the THC. But that's something that we can do in the illicit market of counterfeit nicotine vaping products.
Executive Karen, before I get you to respond to an email or two, can I just ask your overall views on vaping? What do you think should be regulated at this point? What do you think should be banned?
I think that flavored products should not be allowed because they are so attractive to young people who maybe can't make the best choices about what to do. The aggressive marketing to kids is pretty apparent, and I think it's pretty cynical. I think it's taking advantage of young people. I support the statewide ban on flavored vaping. I do believe that people, if they're old enough and they want to make a decision to buy these, they should be allowed to, but we need to take a hard look at what's in it and making sure that the industry is being run responsibly and that vendors aren't selling counterfeit items as we've seen in our county.
Can I ask you to respond to an email from Liz? And Liz wrote to us, and this is what she said. She said the U.S. tried an experiment. It was called Prohibition, and that didn't work. There were too many illegal ways to get alcohol. The way to regulate both vaping and marijuana, this according to Liz, is to put it in a special store where the owner is held accountable if someone underage gets the product. Keep the illicit products off the market. What do you think about what Liz wrote?
Well, if, you know, we obviously have to follow the law. I think her example of prohibition of alcohol is pretty valid. We have to make sure that what is being sold is standardized and regulated and properly taxed, and make sure that illicit substances aren't readily available to our residents. You know, when it comes in, you know, I don't know what the thrust of where the thrust of the question came. We know with selling marijuana in Nassau County, it was very clear to us that we are not ready for that in Nassau County. Our law enforcement isn't ready. Our school community isn't ready. Our treatment providers weren't ready. Even our business community wasn't ready. So we're watching very closely to see what the state is going to do on that in the next session.
I just have a question for our producer, JD. Did this come in from Logic to us, or this is just something you found on the internet? Okay, and I just want to say in general that Logic has put out a statement, and this was for everyone, not just to us, but it says all of its vape ingredients are reported to the FDA and to consumers on the back of its packages. So you know exactly what's in there, according to Logic. Professor.
Right, so I would say to consumers, read the fine print. Make sure if you're buying Logic that it actually comes from Logic and not a counterfeit operator.
Josh Elliott, I want to bring you back in because we're just running out of time in about 5 minutes or so. So my question is, and this is what kind of prompted this program, as to how far government should be able to go in terms of regulating and in terms of banning products. And this was prompted by a number of emails and some Facebook products. Where's the line?
I get very uncomfortable when we talk about what we should and shouldn't ban. You know, I think of the times when, you know, governments are banning certain books. And I say that because we should not be legislating based on morality. We should be legislating based on public health. I'm also thinking about what we did in terms of curbing cigarette use. So we did not ban cigarettes. What we did was we slowly increased the amount of tax that we had to use the economic driver, knowing that it was not good for public health, but that we shouldn't be forcing people to not use, to slowly eliminate that over time. Municipalities, of course, then started having places in public that were smoke-free, especially restaurants, casinos, et cetera. And lastly, there was a very well-funded drive to put money into letting people know about how dangerous cigarette use was. And I think that we could be using some of these similar levers if what we're trying to do is reduce use, as opposed to using the heavy-handed cudgel of just saying, nope, can't do it, because I think that there's a lot of effects that take place that you don't expect when you go through that method. I think people can be educated and then make their own informed decision.
Professor Thomas?
Yeah, I think just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. And I think that's advice we should give to our governors, governments of all around. Certainly the state has the power to regulate public health. I think cigarettes are a great example of how many people die daily from the use of cigarettes. I think vaping presents a risk. But what are we going to do if we ban it? You're going to arrest kids if they're caught with it? You're going to throw store owners into jail? What would be the consequences of making it illegal? One, would it work? Would it stop people from using? There's not much evidence that this happened in the past. And two, what would the penalties be? We need to think about that. So I embrace what the other two speakers have talked about. Let's have some reasonable regulations, let adults make their own sometimes foolish choices, and try to help children make their own good choices. We've got great data now that the frontal precortex doesn't mature until your mid-20s. All those things we did when we were young and stupid, we really were young and stupid. And so I think if we can help our younger people, give them some benefit, have the government help them in some ways, and we'll hope for the best.
For some of us, a little bit later at times. Executive Curran, what is the timeline, do you think? When will we see some proposals? When will we see some regulations? Any thoughts on that?
Well, we have proposed to our legislature a bill to ban the flavored vaping. The state did it, so now that's done. We are also looking to ban vaping in our parks, in most of our parks, where smoking cigarettes is already not allowed. We're looking to ban that as well. You know, my bottom line is I do agree with what your previous guests have said. Adults will make their choices, but they should make their choices based on good knowledge, and that the sellers of these products should be held accountable and held to a high standard and properly taxed. And exploiting children for profit is completely unacceptable, and the stakes are high. I mean, you could start them down on a lifetime of addiction with these products. So they should not, and I would support banning any kind of marketing to children for any kind of tobacco/nicotine products.
Are you concerned about potential lawsuits?
You know, people sue about everything these days. We'll just have to take it as we come. But, you know, you want to do the right thing for the right reasons for our kids.
Laura Curran, Nassau County Executive. Laura, Executive Curran, always a pleasure. Thank you. We appreciate your time.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you for the conversation.
Take care. Josh, we have about 30 seconds left. Final thoughts, please.
30 seconds. I would say that there's still some more thought to be put behind this. I would say emotions are running high right now. I think that there is a knee-jerk reaction when you see kids jumping onto whatever the new fad is. In this case, it does seem like it might be something that's dangerous. I think that the inclination is to do something quick and do something now. That's not always the best thing to do. You know, when we saw what was happening with cigarettes, it was longitudinal studies. We just simply don't have the data with these longitudinal studies yet, but I do think that there is a common sense approach that we can all agree to that will, both business owners in the industry and parents will say, okay, this is a halfway point. We protect our people and make sure that we're not being heavy-handed.
Professor, I only have 20 seconds for you. I apologize.
You know, in Shakespearean fashion, discretion usually is the better part of valor. I think government should act with great discretion, be fact-informed, and make their policy decisions based on that.
John Thomas, health law professor at Quinnipiac University. Josh Elliott, Democratic state representative from Connecticut. He represents the 88th district, which is Hamden. Representative, professor, thank you both. It was a great discussion.
Pleasure.
Pleasure being here. Thank you so much.
That's going to do it for our show today. Sabrina Garone is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers, Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas. J.D. Allen is the producer. Anne Lopez is the senior producer, and Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.